some of our council people who have been in the thick of the fight, to not only give an update, but to start off what their thoughts are on the entire process of the 5G installation network. So I see Julie Menon here. So why don't we start off with you? We're going to then go see the other public officials who are here, and then we will ask that people put their hand raise function, and we can call on each of you and start hearing what everyone has to say to join in this conversation. So Julie, would you like to start us off?
Sure. Thank you, Sue, and thank you to the Lex Club for organizing this incredibly important forum. For any of you that I don't know, I'm City Councilwoman Julie Menon. I represent Council District 5, which is parts of the east side of Manhattan, including the southern part of East Harlem, Yorkville, parts of the Upper East Side, parts of Midtown East, and Roosevelt Island. So, as Sue mentioned, close to 40% of New Yorkers do not have access to broadband. I know this firsthand because I used to serve as a city census director, where we had enormous problems reaching people through the census because of this lack of broadband. However, what this plan does is, and we've heard from tons of constituents about their concerns about erecting these in various neighborhoods. There are three of them in my district, largely more in the hospital alley portion of my district. The other 15 on the east side are in Keith Powers' district, but I wanted to come on because we're hearing from so many constituents overall, and so we want to be responsive. After hearing about when the initial proposed sites were first released, the first thing I did is I reached out to OTI to discuss the siting of them, because I just, having been, I've served as commissioner of three different agencies for many years, and I know firsthand when you're trying to fight on an issue, you know, you want to understand the whole parameters of really what we're going to be able to do here, where we're going to be able to have a win. And so in speaking to OTI, I just want to communicate back to you specifically what they're saying. They told us that they will take constituent concerns regarding various sites, such as, and I'm going to read to you their exact language of what they're going to do. They said they will take into account various streetscape issues, such as accessibility on the sidewalk, impact on outdoor dining sheds, impact on bus shelters, impact on bus stops, and other conditions on a specific block. So those are all of the various conditions that they would consider in moving one of these. So it's super important that we focus on them, because my belief is, like, you know, just saying, oh, absolutely not, nowhere, you know, then you're not going to get a win on that issue. So we need to, you know, I just want to be pragmatic here. So those are the conditions on which they are willing to move one of them. They did say very clearly they will not move it based on radio frequency emission concerns alone, however, as long as they are FCC compliant. Okay, so they will not be making a decision based purely on this radio frequency issue, which we have heard from many, if they meet the FCC regulations. So that's why I'm trying to get everyone to encourage on the criteria they will focus on to move one of them. So if you have concerns, and you've got one in District 5 that you have concerns about, the three that are in this hospital alley, please reach out to us. Or if they're in Councilmember Powers' office, please reach out to him about ones in his area. So I just wanted to report back, because I do think there is a path forward if people have concerns to get them moved. So I hope that that's useful and helpful.
I think it's helpful.
Very helpful. And we really appreciate your taking the time to educate us, because the most important thing for us to do is to understand what the parameters are on how best to move forward with whatever position you have. Thank you. Does anyone have any questions for Julie? And I apologize putting you on the spot.
No, please ask me any questions. And Cameron Kaufman, my wonderful director of constituent services, is on here. So please reach out to Cameron. If you do have concerns about the three in the district, reach out to him. If you have any questions about, you know, what I've said about OTI or any other matter, please reach out. We're, you know, that's what we're here for.
Okay. Sure. Ira?
I had to find my unmute. So, Julie, thank you very much for that update. but I have just one question. Is OTI so dismissive that if somebody spent $3 million for their home on the third floor, and then will wake up with a view of Central Park, and then will wake up one morning and have a huge antenna less than 20 feet from their window, that is not something that they will entertain?
So they were like, really, I'm just going to be like as blunt as I can be on this, because I want to give you all like the most factually, you know, accurate information. They were really specific about the criteria. But I do believe, and I, you know, say this as a lawyer, and looking at these criteria, there is a lot of room for, you know, interpretation. So I interpret accessibility on the sidewalk. I mean, accessibility on the sidewalk means a lot of different things. Bus shelters, bus stops, and they said, and other conditions on a specific block. So the other conditions on a specific block is an incredibly vague and broad criteria. So look, we're happy to help in any way that we can. I do think, you know, the more that we can fit the arguments into these criteria, the better and more likely we're going to have a success at moving one of them.
And with your experience, may I ask one follow-up? With your experience, the logical thing, I'm the president of 1050 Fifth Avenue. The logical thing that we want to do is move the tower. We don't want any towers, but if we have to have a tower, it would seem to me to move it on the east side, on the west side of Fifth Avenue, on the park side, so it's not in front of anybody's window. Mm-hmm. How sympathetic do you think OTI would be for that suggestion?
We can definitely try it. I mean, we can absolutely try it.
Ira, didn't they already do that in consideration of the Guggenheim?
Yes, the tower on 87th Street is supposed to be on the 88th Street. It's supposed to be on the west side of Fifth Avenue, on the park side. And the tower at 63rd Street or so is on the park side. So I don't understand why OTI just doesn't move all of the towers that are slated for Fifth Avenue on the park side, on the west side, not in front of a residence.
Agreed. And certainly around the Guggenheim and that whole Museum Alley area is incredibly crowded with foot traffic. So, you know,
unbelievable. Almost impassable. Yeah, almost impassable. And the additional fact, and that has nothing to do with the long term, but given local law with the sidewalk sheds, it's even harder now. Yes. So you've got anybody with a stroller or anybody who's on a walker or anybody using a cane. I mean, they're in trouble because everything is so crunched together. It's even hard for us to get out of our building, especially on holidays or weekends.
Agreed.
That is a real consideration. Plus the fact that 1050 on the 86th Street side has the crosstown buses, which arrive with enormous frequency, and we already have the ticketing machines and also a kiosk telling you what the timing is. So it that side, plus a street sign on a big pole. I mean, it's challenging.
No, I completely agree. In fact, yes, I'm there all the time. I know they know. You know, my district right now, I should just say, is Lexington East. Okay, so I do not represent that area. Under the new redistricting, the only part of Fifth Avenue that I will have is 93rd to 95th Street, just to be specific. The rest of the district is actually going to be going from is Lexington, and then in the lower part of my district, I go to 3rd Avenue. But look, I hear you loud and clear. I do think you should engage with Councilmember Powell, just because it is in his district, so I want to be respectful of those boundaries. I think you should reach out to him and work obviously work closely with his office as well. But, you know, you want to be able to make those arguments. And certainly along Fifth in the museum area, it's there are tourists everywhere. It's very hard to navigate. I have a 4-year-old. I was over there the other day just walking down the street and, you know, just trying to navigate through the people. So I think you have a very strong accessibility argument to make in terms of moving it to the other side of the street.
Thank you.
Well, now that we've put so much on poor Julie, I see.
I'm Keith here too, by the way, guys.
Okay, great.
So Keith, if you could give us an update from your point of view of how things are going and where all of this stands, I think that would be very helpful. Poor Julie, we peppered with questions, and I have a feeling if we can impose upon you as well, there'll be some questions as well. But we'd love to hear what you have to say.
No worries. Thank you. I know Councilmember Mann can hold it down, so thank you for that. But I'm sorry, I was getting off the subway, so I apologize. First of all, thank you guys for doing this. We're getting a lot of incoming on it from folks on the Upper East Side, and it is an issue that is in real time. Lots is happening. The latest update from, first of all, I've come out against them. I think that both they have not really shown us enough information at this point to really demonstrate why they need to be where they're going and how many, and also what need they're filling in right now when it comes to filling in the gaps. So, and I've heard from a lot of constituents in these areas about a whole variety of concerns. We have met with the agency and the group that's contracted to do them, and we're still not really sure of the answer to all that information. So for the ones that are in my district, they still have to go through the landmark. I'm sorry if it's loud. I'm in right near a busy intersection. For the ones that are in my district, most of them, they're in a historic district, so they're going to have to go to the Landmark Preservation Commission. So there's still another layer of approval, even beyond the normal agency siting process. They have just closed a comment period. I think it was this week or end of last week. We submitted comments. We met with them. Many buildings did, too. And so there have been a lot of feedback given to the agency. They're supposed to take that, collect that, and then go from there. What is good news is, and not for all of them, and I know they're not for every single one I'm proposing on every side, but for a lot of them, they have to go through this one more step where there is, I think, going to be a real question about whether they are contextual with the landmark area around there. We've also reached out to the mayor's office to make sure that they're connected and they understand the concerns from my constituents. It's not just one agency siloed off doing this, and I think they understand it. I think they want to see the feedback after the agency's comment period closes. But I'd say right now, I think they're still being reviewed. I'm really thankful everybody who put comments in. We're going to, as we go into the landmark process, also continue to give feedback into make sure we organize feedback and push back on them. And I do think the burden of proof is on the city and the agency to show us more information about why they're needed, why they need to be where they're going, and ultimately really give us more comfort with the reasoning there. So right now
May I ask one quick question?
Yeah.
When I did my research, I'm at 1050 as well, and I did my research, and it seems as though it is the Spectrums, it's the AT&Ts who are saying we're being overwhelmed with demand and therefore we need this. Yep. Our district is saying none of us has a problem. Now, it may be that they're stretched beyond to give us what we have already, or no, this area is pretty good. We need to worry about XYZ. So that's where I'm not sure, because it was supposed to start at 96th Street, and then very rapidly, the historic district, the Carnegie Hill Historic District, was added. And I don't know. I would be interested to know if that request came. And we always know that there's a certain amount of income involved, not ours, but what it costs to put these up and who benefits and who doesn't. Curious to know why at 0 hour, without really much notification, they added what they added south.
So we don't, look, I don't know. I don't think we know the answer to that question either, though it's a good one. You're right to say that the four, you know, multiple providers here are all going to be, I think, together in these powers. And that's why, that's at least what they say is the reason they're so large. What I don't still understand, and this is where we think the burden of proof is on them to tell us and not the other way around, is why there need to be so many in one area if they're just trying to fill a gap in it. What are the gaps? We've looked at the FCC maps. We've looked at other, I think what we're trying to do is to make them show us the need for it. And also, they're
recording in progress.
Tremendous. Hold on, sorry. They're tremendously large. They're ugly. Anybody who's seen them, I think you can tell how large they are. But I think what we want to know is if they're supposed to fill a need, what that need is, and why there needs to be so many in one area in order to fill that need. I think there are probably some gaps, and I also think there's probably a need to make sure we're accommodating a long-term need. But I think we have to, that information is still outstanding to us, and I don't think we want to move forward with them until we have a better understanding of what those answers are.
Okay,
so thanks. For the next question, Chelsea Formica.
Oh, thank you. I just wanted to hop on in after hearing what Ira was saying and asking Councilmember Menon. My building at 520 East 90th has been trying to fight one of the pole top 5G antennas that were erected. It was erected on October 1st of 2022. And in answer to your question, yes, OTI can put something up. We got a sign outside that said that they were going to do construction on a light pole outside of our building. And the next day, it was not a light pole. It was a giant 5G pole that is right outside of my now 8 month son's room. It's less than 10 feet from my building, and we did not get the ability to have any kind of town hall like this, community board meeting, anything like that. We've been working with Assemblymember Seawright's office, Councilmember Menon, and the borough president's office to try to ask OTI to move it across the street or move it. We're right by Asphalt Green, Gracie Mansion, and we are trying to ask them to move it to right by the FDR or somewhere that's less intrusive and not so close to a residential area where we're working, breathing, living, sleeping, everything, especially with my son. But OTI has been very unresponsive. But I just wanted to echo that it's really frustrating, and yes, it can happen, and it did happen, and the poll is, as of right now, apparently not turned on, but we don't know. I think that it's great that you guys are all able to have this kind of meeting about these poles before they're being erected. And we're not going to stop fighting, trying to get this one taken down, but just here in support.
And Barbara, the next question.
So Councilman Powers, thank you. You wrote a fantastic letter to OTI, and thank you for that. And they sent me a standard form letter back. My question is, I believe the only way this is going to ever change is the mayor has the ultimate power. And my question is, what do you recommend we do to get to the mayor, and correct me if I'm wrong, if it's not the mayor that can achieve this, and how can we be more effective? Because we can all sit here for days and days and days and talk about the things we don't like about it, but I'm looking for action quickly before the toothpaste is out of the tube.
Yeah, that's a good question. That's why we've reached out to the mayor's office as well to connect the dots between those things, because I don't want to leave it to an agency that's sort of siloed off and they don't have any communication or contact at City Hall. We're going to follow up on that. We had a conversation with them recently and are going to follow up on it now the comment period is closed. Look, for folks that, I mean, there are folks I've talked to in these buildings around it who do have actually a relationship with the mayor or somebody there. And so I've instructed them they should reach out and they should make that clear there, that there is an issue. There's also, like I said, going to landmarks. So we're going to have another opportunity at that agency to push back on them. It's not going to just be left up to one agency. It's going to be about to go through a approval process. So we have a little more time, I think, to keep this conversation open. But for folks who have relationships there, they should do it. Highlighting or raising the profile issue, important. We're going to do more communication to the agencies that the mayor is going to be aware of. I'm going to reach out personally to the mayor and all the above. And I think that what is helpful is when we really have better information about what the goal here is. And what we do know is I think the screens are no longer allowed on these poles. So it also raises to me a question of whether the advertising revenue that was going to be generated from areas like Fifth Avenue where there's high foot traffic and they can raise a lot of revenue, whether that's going to change the opinion of where they should be. But you're totally right. I think for anybody in any of these buildings that has relations to folks at City Hall, you should do it. We're going to do it. And we're going to coordinate with the other elected officials as well to make sure that the mayor is understanding of the issue. And we've done that, and we're going to keep doing it.
Thank you.
And one last question to impose on Keith. Stacey Katz?
Oh, hi there, Councilman Powers. I just wanted to thank you so much for jumping on in the middle of the street like this. It's just really amazing. It's good to see you. And thank you so much for all the work you've done, because this has happened all within a month. It was a surprise for all of us. The thing is, our particular building at 1050 Fifth Avenue has so much pedestrian traffic. And just this weekend, I was walking with my 83-year-old mother, and we literally had to just stop and wait while people are walking to the museums, but they're also walking to the bus, and there's crosstown traffic from even Lexington Avenue walking to the park. I counted at least 50 people. So now if you add a link tower next to our exit entrance canopy, it's a different argument than a landmark argument, which is also valid. We would add that on, but we definitely have like a safety issue. And I just wanted to bring that up because our building is a little unique in this way, and see what your thoughts were for us.
Yeah, no, your building, I just went out there actually yesterday just to take a look. Well, I was over there and I wanted to take a look at exactly where they might put it in. And you're right, it's a very busy area.
Wild.
Of the city, because of the museums, because of the park, and exactly from the subway, people walking over to the park and things like that. Yeah, that's why I don't think it's a great location, but that's why also why I think perhaps we're trying to find out if this was intentionally supposed to be there because of the things like when they originally, I think I proposed to put screens on these. And whenever I see the screens, I think advertising revenue, and that's a high traffic area where they could. We know they can't do that. At least we've been told they didn't, because of the historic district part of it. So that's what we're also trying to figure out, is whether that changes any part of the plan. But your building is right in a very, very busy area,
it's unsafe. And I think that there was not a rigorous, I don't believe that CAN letter that I received back, that there was a very rigorous process, because they're putting another, or planning to put another link tower two blocks away.
Jump in, it's not an advertising play any longer. The play here is the carriers, the Verizons, AT&Ts, T-Mobile, are going to rent space in the tower to then sell you streaming services. That's the play here. Just for everybody, it's not advertising.
That's right. But I always get suspicious because these are contracts that include revenue raising aspects of them. Look, Stacey Katz's question is one that I think is a good one. It's not what I keep coming back to. Why they put so many in one area if it's about boosting service? And that's one of those questions I think we need an answer to.
Other answer we might need is, if one is located within two blocks of another one, what is the distance that a 5G tower can cover? Because I know out in the wilderness of Long Island, they plant a 5G tower that's supposed to cover hundreds of miles.
And I think that's a really important question, is why are there so many in one area if it's about boosting service? So look, all questions we are still trying to get a handle on. And when we have answers, we will report back to everyone with some more information.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Keith. Next up, we're going to hear from Odette Wilkins, who is incredibly knowledgeable about the topic, to update her from her point of view.
Hello, everyone. Thank you very much. And thank you very much for having this wonderful town hall forum. I just want to take a step back. What we've been hearing is that our only recourse is basically to relocate a tower to across the street. The city has committed itself to a contract with CityBridge without community participation, and CityBridge should have had prior community participation before entering into a contract. So now we're being told that we can only consider moving it across the street. Now, their justification is very interesting. They say that the deployment is necessary to fill a gap in service. Now, they're saying that they have It's basically the telecom say-so that they have a gap in service. The problem with that is that they usually use computer-generated propagation maps that purport to show gaps in service. Those are largely inaccurate. The FCC Enforcement Bureau found that the accuracy rates of those maps at best was at 64.3% and at worst was 16.2%. And now we're basing the need for these towers based on their maps. That's not a very good gauge. And as a matter of fact, the FCC staff has recommended that those maps no longer be accepted without actual drive-by tests to back them up. When CB8 had asked OTI for actual reports of where there were gaps in service, they had none. There were no reports. There's nothing to back anything up except for the telecom industry say-so based on propagation maps that the FCC has found are largely inaccurate. So the city is starting to send a very clear message that they do not need these towers and they do not want them. So the Community Board 5 in Manhattan has put in for a resolution for a moratorium. The, of course, CB8 has. CB9 is also putting in a resolution for a moratorium, and so is CB10 Brooklyn. CB10 Brooklyn actually was passing a disapproval. Now, CB2, we had a meeting with CB2 yesterday, and they're preparing a resolution, and they want more information. So there's a growing message here that people do not have the information, that OTI has not been transparent, and they should have gotten community participation prior to any rollout of this 5G. Now, there are a number of considerations that we need to take, we need to look at. Of course, there are the aesthetics. And Sue, at one of the meetings, you pointed out very correctly about public communication structures, such as the Link 5G cell tower, because they have to conform in historic districts to particular dimensions. So they have to, and these far exceed the dimensions of what is allowed under the rules under the Landmark Preservation Commission. The other things that they're not saying is that right now we are trying to have in New York State a method of lessening our carbon footprint. The industry is not saying is that 5G is basically an energy hog. The energy consumption from 5G infrastructure is expected to increase 61 times from 2020 to 2030. That is a huge carbon footprint. And so that is a problem, particularly when we're trying to reduce energy consumption. The other thing is that cell towers have been known to catch fire, and that's a fire. They're basically a fire hazard, and they're basically electrical constructions, and so they have to be very well maintained, and so they really have to meet electrical specifications. The other thing is that there needs to be a fall zone. Usually, when you have a cell tower, there's a fall zone. At least the height of the tower, and that's in the event that the tower collapses. So at three stories high, there should be a clearance from everything, from traffic, foot traffic, from buildings, of at least three stories. They're planning on putting these as close as 10.6 feet to buildings. So basically, if or when the tower collapses, it can collapse and crash into people's windows and injure people in their homes and on the street. The other thing is that this has been touted as bridging the digital divide. In other words, serving unserved and underserved communities. The problem with that is that the United States Government Accountability Office stated that 5G deployment is likely to exacerbate disparities in accessing telecommunications services. Now, that office is the highest audit institution of the federal government. The other thing is the devaluation of property. Property has been known to be devalued by at least 20%. And the alternative is fiber. And that's not such a big move. That's not such a big jump, because 4G and 5G depend on fiber optics. 5G cannot operate without fiber optics. So you have fiber optics running all the way up the pole to supply the energy to the wireless antennas. But the better alternative is to just extend that fiber just a few yards to the premises, to the homes, businesses, schools, medical facilities, in short, to all facilities. So, and then also keeping the telecommunications infrastructure underground would be without any visual impacts. So fiber is very fast. It is unsurpassed. And former FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler under the Obama administration has been calling for a fiber-first policy and wireless only as a last resort. And that is exactly what the federal government is doing in implementing the Infrastructure Act, which is, I think, about $42 billion. Now, there are other concerns with respect to these 5G towers and wireless radiation in general. And that is that there has been no pre-market testing of 5G for public health or safety. Now, that was confirmed by Senator Blumenthal of Connecticut when he held a hearing in Congress of the telecom executives. They confirmed that there's no pre-market testing being done. The World Health Organization, their International Agency for Research on Cancer, classified wireless radiation as a possible human carcinogen back in 2011, similar to lead, diesel fuel, gasoline, and gasoline engine exhaust. And OTI had incorrectly presented to CB8 that the WHO said 5G is safe. There is no agency, there is no one who will say that 5G is safe. The other thing is that there was a study commissioned by one of the major telecom carriers that found links to cancer, leukemia, neurological disorders, and cognitive impairments, and specifically special caution for children. And that was a study that was conducted in 2000. That was leaked out to a nonprofit, and that was made available to everyone. So I just want to mention that, again, that it's not a question of moving these 5G towers across the street. It is a question of whether they're needed at all. And so far, the city has not made its case that it's needed at all. And if they're using propagation maps from the telecom industry, they're, at worst, they are only 16% accurate. So we cannot use them. And thank you for this opportunity to present.
Sure. Thank you. Ellen, you're next.
Ellen Delsener or the other Ellen?
No, the other Ellen, but you can go afterwards. Perfect.
Okay, thank you. One second. So my name is Ellen Oza. I'm one of the co-founders of New Yorkers for Wired Tech. I do understand what the councilwoman said, that OTI will not listen to requests to move towers based on pulse-modulated microwave radiation. Yet I just want to quickly highlight what a huge red flag that should be for trusting OTI. And even if this is not an approach used initially, it's important to understand how misleading their safety assurances are. When they speak, when they write, notice how they deflect to the FCC exposure limit, yet they don't say that this limit is beyond inadequate. It was set in 1991 based on fraudulently selecting and misinterpreting studies done in the late 1980s. Then it was rubber stamped in 1996, and is being used in 2023 to provide false assurance of safety. Significant harms to the biology of living beings, human and others, has been found at levels much lower than the FCC limit. It's also significantly higher by many orders of magnitude than exposure limits in other countries. Referencing this exposure limit in terms of safety is either ignorant or gaslighting, and OTI should know better. And also the DC Circuit Court of Appeals on August 13, 2021, found that the FCC's failure to review 11,000 pages of scientific evidence provided to them was arbitrary and capricious. And lastly, I just want to say that gaslighting is a tactic of abusive relationships, as well as moving goalposts. We'll just put them here, then we'll put a few more here, then we'll put some more here, as well as assuming one can walk all over others without consequences while telling stories of how it's for their own good. It's like setting the limit for arsenic in water at 10 parts per 100 instead of 10 parts per billion, and saying this water only has 4 parts per 100, it's not close to the exposure limit. I'm just going to put a few links in the chat that are really important to understanding how misleading these safety assurances are.
And again, if this is not a viable track to initially proceed with trying to get the towers moved, I understand that. It just should be part of everyone's understanding of this. And hopefully the more people realize what an egregious abuse of not our landscape, but also it is, the more people can have informed conversations. So thank you.
Thank you. Next, we're glad to be joined by Kevin Rogers from Rebecca Seawright's office. Kevin, you're up. How you doing, Kevin? Okay. Well, Kevin, when you get back connected, we'll be ready to hear from you. So just to give everyone a time frame of what's been happening, the comment period to the OTI on their placement of the 5G towers ended on Monday. I assume we're going to then get a report of them confirming that these are the locations that they wish to have. Then they will make an application to the Landmark Preservation Commission, and that will be to determine whether or not there's approval by the Landmark Preservation Commission for those of the towers that are going to be placed in the historic district. Those are the ones on Fifth Avenue, et cetera. There will be a similar comment period that we ask that everybody get involved. But before we do that, I want to talk a little bit about what's been happening now. The Carnegie Hill Neighbors Organization has been collecting money to hire an attorney to fight what's been happening. And if anyone would like to update the group about what the Carnegie Hill neighbors have been doing, that I think would be helpful at this point. Is there anybody who would like to talk about what they are doing in terms of the collection of monies? Why don't we start with Stacy, although there are some other people as well. So Stacy, why don't you start?
Well, they actually had a meeting today a little earlier, and they have a commitment. I don't have the exact numbers. I think 20 buildings committed to donating to the CHN cause. They've only collected, I think, just a handful so far. But they have really organized committees. They have a tech person. They have somebody who they're actively interviewing people who are involved with telecommunications and lawyers. And now they're just asking us to ask other buildings to be involved and to donate financially. That's where they are right now.
So, Lo, we'd love to have also the update from you.
Yes. My name is Lo Vandervalk. I'm president of Carnegie Hill Neighbors, and Stacy is correct in characterizing what we're doing. We haven't collected a lot of funds, maybe 10,000, maybe a little bit more, but you know, when you hire a lawyer, you have to expect very high bills. And we are also actively looking for an engineer to advise us. We haven't achieved that yet. But we expect the majority of the buildings that we are approaching will contribute, so we're not pleading poverty, but you know, there could be unexpected things happening down the line where suddenly you need more money. But we will reach out, and we don't see that as the major issue. We think the issues in front of us are the major issue, and stopping this in its tracks. And the timing, for example, the timing of the landmark of the appearance before Landmarks Commission. I just want to add that the deadline of January 16th was really very useful for all of us, because it also was the deadline for elected officials. Councilmember Keith Powers, of course, had sent his fantastic letter earlier, but we heard from Manhattan Borough President Mark Levine he submitted on the 16th, and we heard about it. We got the copy this morning, and it's an outstanding letter. I mean, you couldn't ask for a letter that opens up all sorts of avenues. He's basically saying, look, there should be no more placing of these towers in residential areas until until they have taken into account six items that he listed, and it's worth that all of you should get a copy of that letter. We will post it on our website. It's in the public domain. But included in that are considerations of why aren't they placing them on the tops of existing infrastructures, such as street lights and lamps, and of course establishing the need and reaching out specifically. He mentioned alternatives, and I think that's very important. So he's basically supporting a moratorium for residential districts, which includes, of course, most of the historic districts and other residential districts which deserve protection from these towers, which are totally out of context of anything that New York has ever faced. Recall about 6 years ago when we had the Third Avenue kiosks. Those kiosks are only 10 feet tall. These towers are 32 feet tall. And those kiosks were placed in highly commercial avenues, such as Third Avenue, where they almost seem appropriate because they're bus stops with advertising and so forth. We have none of that in the residential areas of the Upper East Side. So along Fifth Avenue, along Park Avenue, along Madison Avenue. So even Lex. So, you know, I think this is a great period of reconsideration, and therefore I would even imagine that Landmarks should not be taking this issue on until the conditions that Manhattan Borough President Levin has been satisfied. So I think we're going to go into a holding period, but maybe I'm being too optimistic, okay? But at least we have more ammunition to answer if they move forward. And Mark Levine also mentioned that there should be an educational process. And if that's taken serious, we expect that could generate a white paper, which really spells out all the issues. Because in every one of these town hall meetings or other meetings that we've had, people are still confused. And no one has all the answers that should have been provided. So, I think we can be somewhat optimistic, but there's a lot of heavy lifting ahead of us. Thank you.
Do we have a representative from Rebecca Seawright? Kevin, are you here?
I'm sorry, I had to rejoin. My audio is a little screwed up here.
Thank you. Well, welcome. And we'd love to hear what you and the Assemblywoman have to say.
Of course. So thank you all for having me tonight. I'm Kevin Rogers. I'm Assembly Member Seawright's Legislative Director. And, I was on for Councilman Powers and Councilman Menon, and we've been working with their offices closely about what's happening in our particular neighborhood. You also heard from Chelsea Formica too, and she is our constituent who really raised the red flag here back in October about the invasive nature of a lot of these 5G stations that are popping up around the neighborhood. So the assembly member has joined in co-authoring letters with Councilmember Menon and Borough President Mark Levine, essentially asking for the same thing, a moratorium on these 5G installations until we understand and have a clear picture on what's going on. So we've written, I think, three letters now, one directly to OTI, one to the mayor's office, and a joint letter with Menon and Borough President Levine. And we're this session, we're going to be introducing legislation that puts together a panel to study, exactly the need, because we still don't and haven't gotten a clear answer on exactly the need for why these 5G stations are so closely put together and what the radius is and basically the whole concept behind it, and also to study the health effects too, because that hasn't been clearly you know, demonstrated, studied, and conveyed to us. So we're going to be introducing legislation in the next couple weeks, and hopefully we're going to pass on the state level to have some kind of remedy to this, hopefully soon. But we stand, you know, committed to rectifying this situation, because it is, you know, almost unfathomable in a way. So, I just want to give that quick update, and that, you know, we hear you, and we're, you know, working with our colleagues to help address this situation.
Thank you. Julie Martin, we'd love to hear what you can add to the conversation about how this is a pilot program and the Public Design Commission.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for asking me to chime in here. I'm just, I'm also part of New Yorkers for Wiretech, and I've been trying to catch up to the hearings that they've had over at the Public Design Commission, which seems to have gone back at least a year, several ongoing meetings, and really it was very unpopular with all the commissioners. And then I know others have been studying this as well. And the last hearing was on September 12th of 2022, and things had changed, but still the approval was based on community having an input, and it was conditional, and this is still a pilot project. There are only supposed to be, I believe, 200 polls in the residential districts, and I see over 300 in their data set. So I'm not sure if that's because some are in commercial and some are residential. But still, the fact that they're presenting this as a fait accompli is kind of deceptive, because it's really a pilot project, and the community is supposed to have a say. So you're all in your rights to be raising these issues now.
Just to give you an update, and if there's anyone here from Community Board 8 who would like to chime in, Community Board 8 has held a series of town hall meetings such like this, and they have voted and passed two different referendum. One went to OTI, which called for a moratorium, and the other one went to the Landmarks Preservation Commission, explaining how this would affect the historic district on the Upper East Side. But if there is anyone else from CB8 or who would like to chime in about that, that would be a terrific time for you to do that now. All right. Ellen, would you like to add a final comment?
Which Ellen?
Why don't we start with you, since you haven't spoken yet?
Actually, I did, but my question is, my quick question is, if the Carnegie Hill Neighbors Association is working on getting an engineer and working on getting a lawyer, are we taking too much time? I mean, if we want a moratorium, what is the legal need for us, how do we proceed to at least get a moratorium or to file our complaints legally, I guess is what I'm saying. In other words, working on it or knowing that we need an engineer to do a CAD drawing or whatever. I mean, are we wasting time? Or is a poll gonna just pop up? Or has what the our elected officials done so far holding the breach of trust? I mean, are they effectively making it known that there's going to be tremendous pushback, or are we dawdling around having good conversations with intelligent people and not taking the correct action?
Lo, do you want to address that? All right, well then I'll start, but feel free if somebody else would like to jump in as well. Once OTI comes out with their final report, we're gonna know much better where we stand in terms of where they plan to go forward. There have been a lot of comments. There have been the CB8 resolutions brought to OTI. And first step is to hear whether or not they plan to go forward with this. Then the possibility of lawsuits starts. With regard to the historic district, they first need to get through the Landmark Preservation Commission. So there's a whole other approval process that we can go forward. But once that occurs, then the question is, do we have enough in terms of violations of the appropriate law to call for a stay? And there have been some discussions whether to bring such an action in state court, in local civil court. There are some discussions because the Upper East Side Historic District is also a preservation area via the federal government to even go into federal court. And I know those discussions are being had. I don't believe there have been any decisions that have been made, but I think those are the issues that are being addressed right now.
Thank you.
But feel free if there's anyone else who'd like to join in. All right. So the question is call to action. And what are the different groups planning to do? There are a number of individual residences, buildings that have been speaking to council, but the Carnegie Hill neighbors are also speaking to council, and they are arranging and not only arranging for petitions to be signed, the last petition was submitted to OTI, but also arranging a collection area for donations toward the legal fund. And I do believe that they have been speaking to a lawyer in particular who is going to be addressing all of these issues. The next step is when the actual application is being made to the Landmark Preservation Commission, everyone needs to get involved and speaking, and their meetings are open to the public. First they will have a comment period. And we all need to get involved in letting them know where we all stand and why. And then when they do schedule it for a public hearing, and those hearings are held by Zoom, we all need to be on those meetings expressing our concern and asking to speak and asking to be involved so that our point of view is heard. And with that said, we're going to close up tonight, but tonight is not the end. It's only the beginning. And please get involved. There are a number of areas in our chat, which will give you areas of how to get involved more. And now is not the time to stay silent. Now is the time to get involved. Vanessa, do you want to close us off?
Sure. Thanks so much, Sue. Hi, everyone. Sorry for the distraction right here. I'm Vanessa Aronson, was just elected last night as the incoming president to the Lex Club. And we're so grateful for organizing this event. Our mission is to make our community more democratic, both the big D and little D. And I can't think of anything more democratic than listening to the community. So events like this, I'm very sorry. So we hope to have more events like this. If you want to find out about them in the future, I put the mailing list link there. But thank you for sharing your voices, and apologies. Thank you for bearing with Lavari's telling me I need to stop. Have a wonderful night, everyone.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Recording stopped.